Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From the blackest corners of your mind, they call, pulling you deep into shadow, twisting your senses, keeping you from sleep. It's time to face your darkest fears. This is Tales to Terrify.
Good evening, children of the night. Welcome, fellow denizens of the dark and macabre. My name is Steve Gagan, and I'm a narrator and member of the Slush Readers cadre here at Tales to Terrify. And I'm honored to be your guide down our hemlock-strewn portal. As you may have noticed, Drew is still missing in action. But I'm sure, given the tenacity of our beloved hellhounds, we should be able to dig up at least a big enough piece of him to reanimate. Just a gentle reminder that our submissions wormhole is still open and hungry. So shake those nightmares free of the cobwebs they're trapped in, and check out our submissions tab for complete details. We have one story this evening which comes to us from James Cato. James Cato is an environmental organizer and lives in Pittsburgh with his pet gecko. Look for him in Reckoning, Smoke Long Quarterly, and Daily Science Fiction, among others. Follow him on Twitter, @the_sour_potato. His writing is compiled on jamescatoauthor.com. His first collection, Becoming Roadkill, is forthcoming soon from Redbird Chapbooks. Children of the Night, join me for James Cato's Flying Water, a Tales to Terrify original.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Myrna woke up late. She could see two men wrestling in the dunes through a wind rip in her tent, alongside a dog in a car buried past the wheels. Once again, the beach had moved inland. The men were muffled by sand, grains stuck to knuckles, making razor slashes across faces. Turf fights were good-natured but intense. The men bled like two male elephant seals representing their tribes. When a house went under, the furniture floated for days. Kitchen tables and chairs, paperback novels, plastic figurines, and miniature dump trucks ended up pinned to ceiling fans. Drowned pets drifted in the attic, bags of chips, paintings. Then, all at once, everything became waterlogged and sank like a cluster of deflating balloons back to the floor. Underwater houses were easy to rob. Myrna had a specific house in mind. For a while, certain appliances kept working in underwater houses. Fancy watches told the time, and kitchen windows were bright. The house Myrna planned on reaping had gone under last night. This could be a good or bad thing. One man had won the fight, the clamor finally swallowed by gull cries. Dullish waves gleamed beyond, and a black cat rusted in the sun, sleeping on the docks. Myrna knew what happened when water flew into a house, but she didn't know what happened when water flew into a silver mine. She would find out today. It was time to reap. She walked right between the men. The winner was antlered now, a 6-point rack strapped to his head. Antlers represented Philadelphia. The loser, sitting bleary in the sand, wore sleeves of seashells. Charleston. City after city drained their dams and displaced tourists came, claiming beachfront.
Reaper, huh? The Philadelphian asked Myrna. Shame on you.
He was hunkered by the car mirror shaving. The dog shot out of the driver's side and Myrna flinched, but it only rushed to the Charleston man and began licking his face. Myrna didn't like dogs, and they didn't like her. She had a tuna-soaked treat in a sealed bag to win one over if need be.
Reapers are almost worse than the gleeful, said Charleston. You can't blame the gleeful. They can't help it. They're nuts.
Myrna stared at him. When he frowned, a vein flashed like a bolt of lightning from his forehead to his temple. The Philadelphian helped him up, shook his hand, and snapped a seashell off his arm as a token of the outcome. Little Philly had dibs. Myrna kept walking. An overpass sloped directly into the water, power lines following. Houses dipped beneath the waves. People stood looking at the water, tourists from Charleston and New York. People came and looked at the ocean where the mine hole used to be, victims of a common impulse. There he was. Myrna spotted Lan waiting alone on a crumbled curb, way off from the tourists, patient as always. His diving suit, like hers, was ready, but for the flippers, which they would squeeze on after anchoring the boat. "Slow up now," he cautioned when she neared. "The big pack is distracted, but don't go tempting them." Myrna followed his finger to a whale spine swarming with dogs. They'd learned that man's friendship could only take them so far, and quivered with purpose, feeding. Last week, droves of Cheetos bags stranded. Usually you could find dolphins, crabs, mushy, translucent things, hundreds of feet long, with arms like vines. Also, victims of terrible crimes. That's what Lan called them. People, bits of people. Chins full of teeth. Heads with big grins. The fish nibbled, Lan called them. Gull gobbled. Bull sharks loved the brackish bays formed by the surging sea and rivers. Could have been shark attacks. Myrna had another theory. The gleeful. Maniacs bent on securing humankind's death, because why not? The gleeful tended to be young, rich, nihilistic. At least one of the gleeful lived on a barge anchored way far out. Claudia, the ocean scorcher, daughter of some famous lawyer, the girl who burned gasoline at night. Tourists steered clear of her barge. "Nobody grief you on the walkover?" Lan asked, pushing off. When she shrugged, he whistled. "The tourists might be going soft. We used to get into fistfights going after the homes." "Well, the tourists used to really be tourists." Lan paddled, skimming. "Hey now, happy thoughts." Myrna sat in the nose of the rowboat, facing backwards. Lan's buzzed head looked velveteen in the sun, shining to his scalp. A bruise bulged above his ear. Lan was always hiding things. You lie long enough, the lie becomes truth, even true to you. There was danger on the beach for a reaper. Also, kindness, warm dinners, soft scrapes of fabric and legs on towels, kisses. Maybe Lan and Myrna would kiss. The boat moved quietly through seaweed and styrofoam. They were getting close to the house they'd been watching for years, a stone home above the abandoned mine. No matter how fast, as the sea rose, the rich erected beach houses to rent out to other rich people, McMansions. That's what made this estate stand out. It was old school, built to last. Any idiot willing to invest so much straight into the Atlantic might leave behind things of value. "You can really see them today," Lan said, gesturing with the paddle, talking about the tears in the fabric of reality. He lived and breathed simulation theory. There was a sense that the world was cracking up. He saw hints of unseen hands tinkering, characters only deep as their skin. Lan's religion was lonelier than most, but he did get satisfaction out of seeing the simulation confirmed. "You think it'll happen soon?" He nodded. "I can feel the physical laws of the universe changing. The water will start flying soon." Myrna smiled over at his sculptured head. Yes, he was consistent. 6 years ago, before they were reapers, before they were tourists even, Lan had a dream about the ocean flying, lifting up like a manta ray with great, whooshing flaps. He believed it would be the final image before the simulation ended. She pointed out a rusted crane reaching out of the water, kids playing on the hook, old mining equipment. "We're close." "Actually, we're here," said Lan, peering over the side. The hull scraped the top of a tree. "Nectarine?" he asked, pulling a cooler from under his seat, flipping it open and handing over a treat wrapped in a paper towel. Myrna fought back a grin. "These little moments." She hefted the nectarine, appreciating its weight before she bit down to the core. Who knew how he afforded it? Myrna waited for him to say something more, but he didn't, and so she started shoving on her sucking rubber flippers. The submerged forest strained, wanting badly to fly, but it was held back by its roots. Myrna and Lan kicked through canopies, swimming into gloom, and Myrna felt her mood moving the opposite way. Land was all corners and worry. Water was full. Tactile, marvelous, and immersive. Everything touched. Her flippers rippled dandelion lawns. "I want a submarine," Lan signaled. He hated diving. consistent to the end. They followed an insulated live wire to a blown-out house leaking shoes and baseballs and lampshades. Myrna held her palms up. "Check it out?" Leanne gave a thumbs up, then jabbed the grabber claw at his chest. "You keep watch, I'll go inside." His nickel oxygen tank faded from view. Myrna stood guard with the spear gun. She'd made it herself from real cord and a sharpened piece of rebar. Which reminded her, Lan would be leaving soon. The consistency that made him so attractive came with downsides. He dated on a regular schedule, most recently Bryn, and before that, Christia. He believed certain people were not people at all, rather figments guiding him on a simulation path. Christia introduced him to reaping. Bryn got him interested in the mine. Whenever he was single, Lan drifted toward Myrna. He was a stoplight never changing from yellow. The garage door slid open. Lan waved, grappling with a surfboard. A real surfboard would sell. Myrna helped zip-tie it to their anchor before surfacing to refill oxygen tanks and re-entering the sunken city. They dove over a slinky of barbed wire along the road until it plunged into darkness, an abyss deeper and darker than the shadows cast by a drowned forest. "Darkness," Lan signaled. "Something's wrong." There was a canyon where there had not been before. The sea had collapsed the abandoned mine, their house right with it. Any McMansion would have shattered, but when Myrna shined her penlight into the depths, a shine caught her eye. Small as a dollhouse, their house sat like a pearl in an oyster's shell. Half-collapsed tunnels formed a perfect ring around it. So that's why someone bothered to build the thing out of stone. They wanted it to survive. Myrna signaled back, danger. This reeked of the gleeful, and possibly the victims of terrible crimes. The fish nibbled. The gull gobbled. The night Myrna and Lan first became reapers, high winds blew 40-foot waves over boathouses, washing the land away forever. Myrna and Lan watched through the night, perched on the mine tipple. It was unimaginable then that the sea could advance as far as they sat. "You can really imagine the ocean flying away," he said. Myrna nodded, wondering when he would slip into her tent. They'd been flirting for a few weeks, both having migrated to the beach after taps ran dry in Vegas and Denver. Their cities didn't have enough representation to claim beachfront, so they scurried to and fro on the outskirts. They also both happened to know ASL. "We should go take those boats," he said, pointing to a boathouse leaning like a parallelogram. "It would make our lives easier." "The owners, whoever they are, might need them," Myrna said. "Eh, the owners are the same richies building new houses. They make enough money from rentals to justify the cost of losing the occasional boat or porch." Myrna felt his fingers slide atop hers. She held secrets on her body, a tattoo hidden on her upper leg of a goose, a sharpened length of rebar, one dog treat in her pocket soaked with tuna juice. Secrets increase the gravity of moments like this, deepen the self. "I'd rather take boats from the rich than food from other tourists," she mused. "Billionaire stole our water, right? Diverted it to the suburbs?" Soon, she decided, she would share her spear with Lan. They'd need a reef gun for protection if they wanted to snorkel or dive. Other secrets she would hold for later. "It'll make us reapers, officially. You okay with that?" "Better reapers than gleeful. Back in Denver, a band of the gleeful marched into the national park with guns to kill off endangered animals. You could hear them whooping." "Awful. At least they didn't set the trees on fire like in Nevada." "You know, I think the waiting around tires them. In that way, they're weak." "Could be. Anyway, Christia spent a year chopping heads off those huge invasive snakes in Florida for the bounty. She could recognize any invasive species. You remember how she was selling green crab cakes after they destroyed all the seagrass? Somebody beat her bad, broke her wrist over it." Myrna hummed. He didn't often mention Christia, who had gone missing shortly after their breakup. "People don't like people who profit off this stuff. It's natural. Part of the simulation. If you rake it in from some terrible thing, turn a negative into a positive, and the masses need to even you out. Justice. Lan pulled her close. She rested her head on his shoulder. Tomorrow he would meet Bryn from Toledo, who knew everything about the caverns beneath them. That night, though, the smashing waves splintered plywood and released kayaks and rowboats like cattle, which wandered, full of possibility, into the sea. One of them would be claimed by Myrna and Lan come morning. Reapers. The sign next to the hole read, "Danger. Old mine workings. Keep out." The most direct route to the house would have been the crater left by the collapse. This speedy route was also the most dangerous. Sharks nosed around in the disturbance, flushing confused prey in the muck. In clouds of sod, Myrna's speargun aim was shaky. Another threat was posed by loose buoyants, flotation devices trapped in submerged homes that could escape from a roof or window. More than one tourist had drowned after being gored by a breakout surfboard, buoy, or super soaker. Buoyants could puncture an air tank. The longer you waited, the lower your risk, but this house was brand spanking new to Atlantis. So Myrna and Lan took the hole. Waved to the keep out sign as they passed. Ragged walls showed hand-chiseled history. The tunnels had opened, closed, and opened again over generations. Bryn had told them that. Myrna led the dive, penlight hardly denting the darkness. The plan was simple. Follow the main slope for 100 feet, using light bulb junctures as markers. Bryn had told Lan those were spaced every 20 feet so the workers could see. Next, they would take the first right turn, which would lead to a tunnel exit visible from above the crater, probably an old work header, where digging took place. That would get them close to the house. Kicking down, Myrna counted juncture number one, number two. Her breathing echoed in her head. Wires snagged on her sleeves, and green crab swarms drummed their way out of her light into offshoot tunnels. There wasn't room to turn around. Number three, she continued. Rotted joints held the ceiling from the floor, shredded to bones. "Don't like this," she signaled, hoping Lan could see. Bryn had known a lot about the hole, had obsessed over it. There was a collapse in one of the rooms that killed about a dozen people in the 1800s. According to Bryn, they didn't even close operations that day. Number four. Worse yet, if a dead miner didn't have family, the company would leave corpses lost. Number five. Myrna shivered, finding herself floating in a cavernous room, wiggling with shapes and holes. Lan appeared beside her, eyes white. It was not hard to wonder if they were alone in this mineral kingdom. Her mind made dancers in the rivets, voices in the tunnels. It didn't help that Bryn had gone into the hole a few days after she and Lan broke up. She'd found an old mine map online and was looking for loot. Lan had asked around, but nobody had seen her since. More than likely, Bryn was in here somewhere, flying through tunnels white-faced as Myrna. She had told them. The main slope penetrated nearly 2.5 miles underground. What shut the mine down for good was that it had caused an old graveyard to subside. The loss of thousands of ancestors had a way of putting up a big stink. Lan pointed to the right, a dull green tunnel. Myrna kicked hard and fast, popping out of the mine with enough force to scatter sharks and seaweed. Their plan had worked to a T. Before her, the security fence to their prized stone house fluttered open in the gentle breeze of the sea. Lan used the trash grabber to pinch the doorknob. Surprisingly, it turned. Unlocked? Two thumbs up. Well, all norms were off the table if Myrna's suspicion was true. She checked her gauge. 20 minutes of air. Her partner seemed unwilling to try the knob, so she pressed forward, touching a glove to the knocker. A gentle push was all it took. They swam into a well-furnished living room. Myrna took in a frilled pink recliner, a leather couch, and a collection of porcelain rabbits with leaky salt shaker heads and dot eyes. An Edison lamp glinted on the coffee table, and two carved wooden ducks stared from a display case. Then it hit her. Nothing was out of place. At all. No floating chairs, no broken glass, no drawers on the floor. She glided over to the ducks. They were nailed to the glass case, which in turn was bolted to the floor. A current rushed over Myrna's back. Lan had joined her, closed the front door. The penlight made him squint behind his mask. "No one following," he signed. "Anything good?" Another soft kiss of water brushed Myrna's cheeks. A subcurrent was pulsing from a vent, or something large was moving within the house. Myrna rested her finger on the trigger. "They've nailed things down to retrieve them later," she signed. "Or..." Then she noticed a metallic figurine standing on the coffee table, a silver tree with bronze tendrils of fire in the branches. She reached for it, then pulled her hand back. A roach lay pinned to the wood beside it by a thumbtack, spotlighted somehow. She was pretty sure nobody was coming back for La Cucaracha. Looking up revealed a trickle of light from a perfect circle cut in the ceiling, a portal to a room upstairs. The owners of this mansion knew it would be explored underwater. Before Myrna could sign anything to Lan, another little push of water hit her. Flowers taped together shuddered in their glued vase. The current came from the next room, a doorway dark as an eye socket. She froze. A bear figure leaned into the room, the color of red wine. It twisted toward her, the movement oddly boneless, reaching with spraddled arms. Lan screamed a watery scream, and Myrna's body responded, pulling the spear gun trigger back far as it would go. The bands snapped with a whoosh, and an arm spiraled away from the shadowy body. Her attacker fluttered into the depths of the house, casting a look her way with a vast flapjack eye. "Giant squid," Myrna signaled after a moment. The lopped tentacle lay still, having settled on the couch. The meat inside was white as marshmallow. "Christia told us," Lan responded, signing slowly. "Invasive." Myrna knew what he meant. Christia had told them about humbled squids off the California coast, which moved in after tourists overfished. She shook her head and moved toward the exit. Her arms snagged on something. The spear gun cord held taut, the line extending into the dark room ahead. A tug didn't help. The spear must have punctured drywall. She gave Lan her best pleading eyes. He nodded. It was his turn to lead. Following his flippers, Myrna traced the cord, waving her penlight as they were swallowed in gloom. Expecting a kitchen or a foyer, they instead encountered a collection of aquariums, some huge, some small as cereal bowls. Myrna stifled a shout. In the corner, another Humboldt squid shifted in a horrible nest of flaps and limbs. This one still had all 8 limbs and was a bit smaller. Not that any mollusk the size of a kindergartner was small. It shied from the light. Lan was tapping her shoulder. He gestured. Her spear had blasted through the glass of an aquarium, caught inside by the flopper, which had opened on impact. Treading closer, she saw creatures sucking along inside, the label on the side reading, "Whelk snails." Bright orange apertures caught the penlight. Another invasive, spreading rapidly on the Chesapeake Bay, but not this far north. Yet. Lan gestured emphatically at the lodged rebar. If she pulled her spear, it would bust the aquarium, freeing hundreds of shellfish to pour slowly over the ocean floor. Myrna searched for a solution. A panel from the ceiling had smashed the largest of the containers into halves, probably loosened by the subsiding foundation. She picked up a shard labeled Humboldt and used it to slice through the cord, keeping the light on the squid, which had smushed itself behind a rack of aquariums. Weaponless in this place, an ecological time bomb. And it had more than squids and snails. The collection featured killer algae, dead zone seaweed in pots like houseplants, mollusks with stripes, schools of gray fish with grinning benthic faces, and plenty more unlabeled and unclear. As consolation, the squid seemed intent on hiding, peering around corners with its shallow eye. Lan patted her arm, pointed up. Another circular portal. "First squid went up there," she reminded him. "We need something," he replied, emphasizing by shaking his hands. Myrna agreed. At the very least, a full chronicle of this horror show was necessary to alert the authorities. She tried to remember the last time she'd seen a police car on the beach, but someone would care. Then she saw it, a sliding door blending with the wall, but for the glowing crack beneath its rail. Light. that way. She wasn't sure what to expect, but she was greeted by a fairly regular kitchen. There were cabinets, a stainless fridge, and granite countertop. An oak table with a leaf and three chairs. Regular but for one thing. A thing that drew a scream so deep it scalded her throat. Sitting at those chairs were two corpses, one marbled and bloated, and one only held together by ropes of frayed sinew. Both beamed at her with hot white eyes, the flare catching on suspended locks of hair. Someone had hammered penlights into their skulls, which brought her to the third chair, inhabited by a living, breathing person in an atmospheric submersible suit, who waved. The scream whistled out as Lan tackled Myrna, holding her as she flailed. She was too scrawny to break away, and her penlight flipped out of her hand onto the table. The body in the shining, hard suit rose, domed helmet reflecting eyeball lights like stars on an astronaut. "What did you think?" it said to her through its fingers. "Will you help us?" Myrna squirmed, trying to make sense of it all. "You can't turn these animals loose!" The looming killer, certainly one of the gleeful, paused before trotting around the table, laying a hand on the bloated corpse, and turning the frowning head so twin beams blinded Myrna for a moment. "That was not the right answer," it replied. It picked up hedge clippers and nuzzled them around Myrna's breathing tube. "Last chance." Lan's hands appeared in front of Myrna. "Wait," he said. "The barge. Explain." Myrna twisted hard to face him with as much anger as she could muster, stabbing away fear with an unspoken question. He lowered his eyes before nodding, answering, "New girlfriend." Myrna sat on the barge. It creaked like a swing set with the waves. It must have cost, well, who knew? Building an underwater gleeful time bomb couldn't have been cheap either. She waited, too far from shore to swim, too weaponless to overpower her captors. Claudia stepped out of her submersible with Lan's help. Rotary joints unscrewed and unclipped. She was beautiful only after scrutiny. Her plain face melted behind a radiant gray gaze. Her hay-like hair was hacked short, and lustrous, full-color tattoos of burning trees enlightened her frail body. She wore platform shoes so white, it was like looking at the sun. "So you didn't like your tour," she said, a bemused glance at Lan. "Give her a little time," he said. "Myrna, we need a third, someone we can trust." Myrna stood, paced the side of the barge. A red flag whipped in the wind behind Claudia, matching the hue of the deck. There was a white sign below the flag. "Danger. Benzene. Regulated area. Cancer-causing agent." Myrna didn't need a monologue to know why Claudia was living on a red flag barge. Dumping 1,500s of carcinogenic solvent into the water would cause a fish kill. Any surviving species would be snuffed out by invaders, meaning no more fish, only toxic snails. "The gleeful?" Myrna spat at last. "Good God, Lan." Lan shrugged. "Look, we could be simulations inside the great mind of a technology so unfathomable it consists of thousands of full simulacrums. You're looking for gods. Those are your gods. They could be watching for entertainment, clockmakers, deists, or manipulating elements like our video games, testing us. We might exist outside the simulation, we might not. Some people definitely don't, if you ask me." Claudia sauntered over to a rainbow hammock slung between a rail and the flag, collapsing into it with an exaggerated huff. Beneath it lay tools and dozens of gas cans. "She's not one of us, Lan. You gave her a shot. Let's put her in the house with the others and move on." "Myrna, please. We differentiate ourselves from simple wall ornamentation by manipulating what's left to us. If you don't do that, you're nothing more than texture." It struck Myrna how self-absorbed Lan had become. "She's killed people," she said flatly. "The victims of terrible crimes. The gull gobbled. The fish nibbled." "No," Lan said. His eyes begged for common ground. "No, Myrna, those are from the hole. Remember how Bryn told us about the graveyard? The one that fell into the mine? We found it. Bryn did." Claudia nodded sagely from the hammock. She sure did. The bodies came in handy, keeping people away from the barge. And Christia, she gave us our invasive animals. But neither of them had the vision. That's how Lan knew they were part of the simulation. Myrna shivered atop the benzene cap. Those bodies in the kitchen. Good investigating, Claudia said. They both reacted like you. For reasons unknown to me, you're still breathing. They're not. What are you going to do? Myrna scratched her neck, hugged her knees to her chest. No spear gun, no knife, not even her penlight. Only a tattoo and a dog treat in a Ziploc bag. She took out the biscuit, catching a whiff of tuna. I won't help you. Claudia's eyebrows rose. She picked up a hammer, Myrna's penlight in the other hand. Lan jetted to her side. Come on. What? She's a figment. Let's just, I don't know, please. Let's drop her on shore. Myrna held back a smile. If he vouched for her once, he'd do it again. Consistent, if nothing else. The Gleeful strode past Lan, ignoring him. Gray eyes glittered with madness. Myrna scrambled backward until she hit the corner rail of the squeaking barge. If push came to shove, she'd jump, but without help, she would surely drown. Please, Lan hissed, tugging Claudia's elbow. Let's bring her to the beach, together. Claudia didn't so much as pause, raising her white sneaker and pressing Myrna to the deck like a beetle. We're going out with a bang, the Gleeful said, digging the hammer's spokes under Myrna's chin. Let's put the dog down. Extinction is a beautiful goal. Her eyes swiveled to Lan, processing his words. Take me to the beach. It'll make you one of the Gleeful to the other tourists. Officially. You okay with that? He nodded. Fine, she continued slowly. Lucky old Myrna can live. If she kisses my shoe. This shoe costs $800, girl. It hastens the end. Kiss it. Kiss it deep, or my hammer pegs this flashlight down through your eye. Myrna fidgeted, working with her hands. Lan would not deny Claudia this. So Myrna took the shoe in her hands, tucking a hand around the tongue and the collar, and put her lips to the sole, closing her eyes, getting rusty flakes of paint in her mouth. She waited for Claudia's laugh. You halfway unzipped the fucking thing. The boat ride to shore was silent. Lan watched the ocean while Claudia drove, clouds breaking overhead. Pellets of rain plonked the windshield. Wind split waves in great swelling wings, which Lan watched intently. The motorboat's wake crashed over their rowboat. Lan didn't say a word. For her part, Myrna huddled in as small a ball as possible. A few more minutes, and it would be all over. The throaty roar dulled to a grumble. Myrna smiled at the hovels under stilts as they grew closer. Sand stained black from generations of campfires. Shreds of things collected and kept. Beautiful things. They coasted into a vacant beach. Tourists took cover under jetty stones and towels when it rained. Little Philly and Charleston were ghost towns but for the dogs, who had cleaned the whale spine and now napped beneath its spurs. Guess this is it, Lan said. Thanks for letting me go, Myrna sighed. Sorry I couldn't save you. Lan frowned like she wasn't being literal. With a shrug, he placed his arm around the Gleeful and led her toward his tent on the dune. Lucky Luz watched them go, pointing at Claudia's tattoos. None of them would dare touch her, especially as she bared her teeth at them. But tourists were not the only ones watching. The dogs perked up, tasting the air, whining and rousing, the big pack shaking like twin arms of a monster. They smelled something. A hulking half-coyote broke from the group, snuffling the ground. A dozen hounds, two dozen, crept after it, ears flat, shiny eyes wrapped. Myrna didn't need to watch. The scent of the tuna-soaked biscuit stuck in Claudia's zipped shoe would be too overwhelming to resist, and in order to get to it, they'd have to gnaw off her feet. Myrna looked back over the sea, the flat barge in the distance. The first indignant shriek turned into a sustained duet of screams. Someone would tow the barge away. She waited for the ocean to swell, extending great tendrils to push off from the earth, foamy wings beating gusts of salty wind. But of course it only swallowed the sounds of ripping and giddy yipping from the dune, peaceful as a silent film. The rain pecked the sea in a thousand places. So much falling water only seemed to push the ocean down deeper.
That was James Cato's Flying Water, as read by Emily Strand. Emily Strand is a writer, musician, and college professor living in Ohio, who really enjoys robots. Thank you, Emily.
Well, children of the night, the hour is late, and we've run out of tales to tell. For now. Tales to Terrify is made possible by the tremendous generosity of our supporters on Patreon and PayPal. Incredible fans like Lessel Baxter, Paul Belcher, Amanda Carrillo, Amanda Gottfried, and Orion D. Higra, whose generous support helps keep the lights on and flickering ominously. Not a supporter already? Head over to patreon.com/talestoterrify. Where you'll find all kinds of perks, like ad-free episodes, bonus content, and one-of-a-kind collectibles and merch packs. Every dollar goes back into this show to make it as horrific as possible, and we appreciate it so much. Want another way to support the show that doesn't cost a cent? Head over to Podchaser, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating or review. You'll not only put an unnaturally wide smile on our faces, but help new listeners discover our terrifying tales, too. Why not share your love of the show out in the world with some Tales to Terrify merch? TalesToTerrify.com/merch will take you to our TeePublic store, where we've got a great collection of creepy custom and curated designs. So you can show those around you just how twisted you truly are. Tales to Terrify is produced by Seth Williams, Meredith Morgenstern, Andrew Gibson, Crystal Hammond, Spencer Disparti, and myself, Drew Sebastini, with original theme by Nebulous Entertainment. Tales to Terrify is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License. Join us again next week as we learn to cast curses with more Tales to Terrify.